Good morning. Certainly good to see everyone that is out today. We have several missing, but we have visitors, so we're glad that you're with us this morning. This month's topic of study, Paul has decided to continue through the book of Ephesians, but with a little bit twist, I suppose. The passage that we're looking at is kind of the precursor to the idea of the armor of God. So we speak a lot about the armor of God and the different parts and the different things that make up the complete armor of the Christian. But this is kind of talking about why we need armor. So my topic this morning is, who are we fighting? Who are we fighting? Who is our enemy? Who should we be looking for when we consider the armor of God that we are to wear? For a text, we turn to Ephesians, the 6th chapter, verse 12. Ephesians 6 and 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So there's our enemy. It's not a typical battle. It's not somebody that you can go point out, there's the bad guy, that's the guy I'm fighting. It's on a spiritual realm. It's something different. And that's the battle that we need to be prepared to fight. So for a little while this morning, we're going to discuss this concept of who are we fighting. Before we go further, though, let's go to God in a word of prayer. So exactly who are we fighting in this battle that we find ourselves in? Again, Ephesians 6 and 12, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. That's a scary passage, because that means there's some serious enemy out there. Principalities, powers, against the rulers. It's talking about things that are spiritual. It's talking about Satan on a whole different level. It's on the spiritual side. It's things that we can't see. That's scary to me. And who are we fighting? Don't you wish it was easy like it was back in the old days when you could easily identify like it is in the Westerns? The guys that wear black hats, they're bad. And the guys that wear white hats, they're good. Don't you wish it was that easy? But it's not, because we're not fighting an easily identified enemy. We're fighting an enemy of a spiritual nature. It's a wickedness that enters into people's hearts. Last year in my geography class, we got to the part of the year where we're talking about Southeast Asia. And one of my students, her grandfather, was real big in the VFW, and he had spent a lot of time in Vietnam back when he was younger. And so he wanted to talk a little bit. So he made us a video and answered some questions and talked about what it was like in Southeast Asia in the 1970s. One of the questions that one of the kids asked him was along the lines of, how did just the regular people treat you as an American soldier when you were in Vietnam? And he said that was very strange. He said because during the day, you would go into the villages and everybody was pretty nice to you. He said it was rather pleasant. There wasn't a lot of hostilities. They were the shopkeepers. They were the ones that were running the market. He said, but when night came, you better watch it, because those same people that were so friendly during the daylight were now the ones that they were fighting at night and they were being ambushed by. It was the same people. And he said, you never knew who your enemy was. You never knew who you were actually fighting, because it wasn't the black hats against the white hats anymore. You just could not tell. Enemy and friend, it all kind of had merged together. I think about that now, because we are involved in a spiritual battle. And sometimes the enemies are fairly easy to pick out, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes things get kind of melded together and we can't quite tell who we are fighting. So maybe after this study we have a little bit better idea. I want to discuss this morning three conversations that are recorded in the scriptures of Satan. Because if we can kind of listen to Satan talk, I think we can get an idea of who our enemy might be. There's a conversation that he had with Eve, found in Genesis 3. The conversation he had with the Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew 4. And the conversation he had with God Almighty, recorded in Job, the first chapter. In Ephesians 3, remember here in the Garden of Eden, then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For God knows that in that day you eat of it, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. What's our first conversation that we have with the evil? What can we learn about it? Well, he's a liar. He's a deceiver. He's one that knows just what buttons to push. He can identify weaknesses, and he can pounce on them. And he can take something that seems innocent and turn it into something that is not. He can take logic and try to work against the logic of the human mind. Satan's a deceiver. He's smart. There's a spirit that is wise. It's intelligent. It's just not godly. Eve fell for this. I'm going to start using this line. I was watching a little John Wayne movie the other night. He reminded us that even the Garden of Eden had a serpent. Well, that's a pretty good line. I'm going to use that. And sure enough, the serpent was there in the Garden of Eden. He was tricky. He was a deceiver. He was deceitful. We need to remember that about our enemy. What about Matthew chapter 4, the conversation that Satan had with Jesus? Matthew 4, verse 1. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. But he answered and said, It is written, Man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. But what can we learn about this conversation? Well, the devil's very opportunistic. He saw an opportunity. He saw a perceived weakness in the Lord. He hadn't eaten for many days. He'd been fasting. So he attacked the weakness that he saw. He's opportunistic. We've got to remember that about our enemy. The conversation continues. Then the devil took him up into the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, He shall give His angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. And Jesus said to him, It is written again, You shall not tempt the Lord your God. What can we learn about that? Well, the devil knows the Scriptures. The devil knows the words of God. And he knows how to use them. He knows how to manipulate them into such a way that it works to his advantage. And sometimes he might change them a little bit. But he can take something bad and make it look good. He can take something that is against God and make it look like it's for God. He can take something that's horrible and deceitful and wrong and make it look good and spiritual. You better be careful of that. He's a deceiver. He's tricky. Our enemy knows what he's doing and has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. Finally, and again the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. And then Jesus said to him, Away with you, Satan, for it is written, You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. And then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and they ministered to him. What else can we learn about our deceiver here, our enemy? Well, he's pretty powerful. And he has the ability to give a lot of incentives. I also learned that if you stand up to him, eventually he'll flee from you. But we see a very powerful enemy here. We see someone that has, on a spiritual realm, on a spiritual level, the ability to have great influence over folks. And we need to remember that and not take that for granted. I'm afraid too much in the religious world today, we've gotten away about talking about heaven and hell. We don't talk much about the fact that there's an eternal judgment coming, and we have a place that we're going. Whether we like it or not, or whether we agree with it or not, the Bible teaches we're going to go to heaven or we're going to go to hell. And we don't like to talk too much about that anymore because it just doesn't sound too good. And it's hard to turn that into a great production. And a lot of religious groups and churches around the world, boy, they're really starting to shy away from the teaching of right and wrong and good and bad and eternal damnation because it just doesn't fit into their agenda. But we need to remember the devil's real. And we need to remember that our spiritual enemy is real. And he's powerful. And he's a deceiver. And he's intelligent. He knows ways to twist and to mess with our minds and to mess with our logic. We need to remember that. We got one final conversation. What about Job chapter 1, where Satan had a conversation with God himself? It says, Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, From where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it. What do we learn about that? The devil's out looking. He's a hunter. He's a hunter. Peter said he walks around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He's not messing around. He's not passive. He's active. We have an enemy that's out and about actively searching for ways to destroy ourselves. And we need to remember that. So there's a lot of faces of Satan. There's a lot of faces of our enemy. I just came up with some of them. He's a liar. He's a hypocrite. He's a tempter. He's a doubter. He's an agitator. He's powerful. He's a manipulator. He's an aggressor. And we need to remember this, that that's who we're fighting. Now we can't see him. You know, it's a spiritual battle that we're fighting. You know, wouldn't it be easier if it was something of a physical nature where we saw this fella coming that we could get away from him? Wouldn't that be a whole lot easier? But it's not. It's a spiritual battle. And we have to be prepared in a spiritual means to defeat this spiritual enemy. Let me tell you, Luke 22 and 31, this is what Jesus said to Peter. He said, Simon, Simon, indeed, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. Ever thought about that? That Satan is asking for us. He is asking for our souls. And we need to remember that. We're in a battle. And it's not something that we can take it easy. We can't take a couple days off or take a vacation or decide we're not going to fight too much. It doesn't work like that. Make no mistake. There's a battle going on right now for our souls. And we need to remember that. And we have a very formidable enemy. There's another good verse I like. It's in the book of Zechariah. In the middle of a vision, it says that he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of Jehovah and Satan standing at his right hand to be his adversary. There's a spiritual battle going on. And he is our adversary. And he is right there in the spiritual realm that we cannot see. But he is against everything that God is for. I often think about the old cartoons that used to have the little devil on one shoulder and the little angel on the other shoulder. And the devil's trying to whisper, try to tell the fellow what to do. And then the angel's on the other shoulder trying to whisper and tell him what to do is right. There's a battle going on. And we need to understand that. I wish we could see it all. In fact, if only we could see what Elisha saw. Now, this is one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament. I don't know if you remember the story or not. There's a king, King of Syria, as a matter of fact. And he is trying to hunt down Elisha. Because Elisha keeps running. He's able to, by prophecy, he kind of knows where they're setting traps for him. And so Elisha keeps running off. And so Elisha takes off one day, and he's got his servant with him, and they go up into the hills. And somebody finally squeals him out and rats him out and tells the king of Syria where Elisha is hiding. And so the king of Syria sends a whole bunch of chariots and horses and cavalry and a commando unit, whatever he had, he sent by the cover of night. And so they kind of surrounded the mountain where Elisha and his servant were hiding out for the night. In 2 Kings 16, verse 14, that's a great image. Therefore, he, speaking of the Syrian king, sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to Elisha, Alas, my master, what shall we do? So he answered, it's a great line, Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. For those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And I'm sure that servant is thinking, Elisha has lost his everlasting mind. Because there's two of them, and you look out there, there's an entire army, and there's chariots, and there's horses, and I bet there's archers, and I bet they've got armor. I bet they've got ramparts, everything they need to destroy this city. And Elisha says, don't worry, don't fear. There's more with us than there are with them. And I'm sure he's thinking he's crazy. Verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see. And then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So I kind of found this picture here. It doesn't do it justice, obviously. It doesn't do it justice. But could you imagine having the opportunity to kind of be able to see into that next realm and see what's going on around us? Wouldn't that be pretty impressive? Probably terrifying. But wouldn't it be impressive to be able to see the battles that are going on in a spiritual dimension? Well, Elisha and the servant got to see it. So the servant looks up and then he sees the mountains are covered with these chariots of fire. And then he goes, oh, okay, now I get it. Now I see why there's more with us than there are with them. But see, he couldn't see it before. There's battles going on around us. Don't forget that. Don't forget this line. Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Don't ever forget that when you feel overwhelmed. Don't forget that when you feel like you're losing the battle and maybe you're giving in to the temptation to the sin. When you feel like that our enemy is winning, don't forget that. There's always more with us than there are with them. We just got to learn to look for them, and we got to learn to trust that they are there. I'll give you one more. Mike reminded me of this last week. Here's a great line. In the book of Daniel, there's a king by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. And he is a powerful enemy of God's people because he was the king of Babylon. And he's the one that came in and started taking them back into captivity and wiped out the city and was responsible for the death of many, many, many of God's people. Well, Nebuchadnezzar really got pretty big for himself. He started getting very arrogant. He started getting pretty cocky. And so God struck him down. And in fact, old Nebuchadnezzar kind of lost his mind. And there was a several year period there where Nebuchadnezzar actually thought he was an animal. And so he would walk around on all fours and eat grass like he was a sheep or a cow or something. Totally lost his mind. And Nebuchadnezzar, he's the leader of the most powerful nation of the world at that time. And he goes crazy. He goes senile. This is what Daniel 4 and 17 says. He says, this decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the Senate by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever he will, and sets it over the lowest of men. Who are the watchers? It says it twice in that passage, once in verse 17 and once in verse 13. It makes reference to the watchers. Who are the watchers that have made this decree? And I have no idea who the watchers are. I suppose this term, the watchers, from the context, it seems that they are some kind of spiritual, angelic being. They're watching. So if you're upset about the election, if you're upset about the way the country is going, if you're upset about what's going on in the Supreme Court and what's going to happen, I know it's crazy, but I know one other thing. There's other people watching. And I would suppose if they were watching the kingdom of Babylon, I would assume that they're watching our country as well. There's a reason for things. We may not like it. We may not understand it. But the idea that there's a whole other realm out there, a spiritual realm, when you begin to think about that, it's kind of takes some pressure and some of the edge off. The watcher is there. There's a whole other realm. God is going to take care of his people. And we may not always see it. But there are those that are fighting against us. But there are also those that are fighting for us. There are those that are watching on our behalf. For whatever that's worth. You figure out a better answer of who the watchers are, let me know. Don't be deceived though. Because Satan is a good recruiter too. And he has done a great job of recruiting those that will work along with him. That will work alongside this great deceiver. And as an enemy, he has built up quite an army. And we need to look out and see if we can discover who his allies are. In 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, verse 13, he says, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into apostles of Christ. So he's talking about these that Satan has been able to recruit onto his side. He says they are deceitful workers. They are false apostles. They're false teachers. They always have something to say that is incorrect. And Paul says, you know, it's no big surprise that they can be hypocritical. It's no surprise that they can appear to be something when they're not. Because in verse 14 he says, and no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Well, that's scary. Because now our enemy has the ability to be wrong, but make himself look right. He has the ability to take something that is sinful and be able to twist it into people's minds that it's righteous. And we see this all the time. This idea that there's really not a true right or wrong. There's really not a true standard. There's not an absolute right or an absolute wrong. Everything kind of gets twisted. Everything kind of gets covered. And we find ways to turn what is good into bad and what is bad into good. And we really never know where we stand. Let me tell you, that is one of Satan's greatest tools. He can deceive people by transforming himself into an angel of light. He can take what is evil and make it look righteous. But this thought, how do we recognize all of these deceitful workers that are working with Satan today? How do we recognize them? Well, I got to thinking about it. How can I come up with a good checklist, if you will, to find those that are deceitful? How can we find those that are enemies? And I thought about the verse here in Proverbs chapter 6. And I figure this serves about as good as anything else. A little 7-step checklist here. The Bible says these are 6 things that the Lord hates. Yea, 7 that are an abomination to Him. Now, these 7 things, if God hates these 7 things, if they're an abomination to Him, I figure that's probably some pretty good criteria for those that are enemies of God. So let's think about these 7 as we bring our lesson to a close. These are the 7 things that are an abomination to the Lord. And tell me if you think these help identify who we are fighting. So number 1, he says a proud look. I don't guess anything worse than an arrogant, obnoxious, rude, proud person that thinks they know everything. I don't know if there's anything worse than that. I'm sure there is, but that's not the type of person you want to hang around, right? Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to have a lot of confidence, to be bold, but he says it's a proud look. It's just that look about you that you think you know more than everybody else. I think that's one thing we need to be careful of. Number 2, he says a lying tongue. Well, we've already determined that Satan is a liar. We've already seen that Satan will say whatever he needs to and twist words around and maybe leave some words out or add words to. Satan is a liar. Now, there's actually 2 of them on here that talk about being deceitful. I can't tell you how important that is, especially if you're a young folk. Tell the truth. Just tell the truth. Don't be a liar. Tell the truth. Because if you can't be counted on to tell the truth, that's one of the major complaints against Satan, against our enemy. He's a liar. Tell the truth. Even if it's not good for you, even if it's not conducive for you, even if it doesn't help your situation, tell the truth. Don't have a lying tongue. Number 3, hands that shed innocent blood. Now we get a lot of that. I don't know that we know a lot of folks that we walk around with. That may be the one that we don't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis. I tell you, I come across a lot of liars every day. I come across a lot that want to tell me things that aren't true. I don't know that I come across a lot of people whose hands have shed innocent blood. But I will tell you, that's the enemy. You know, I think back in the scriptures, there's a fellow by the name of Doeg. I always remember him. D-O-E-G. Look him up if you don't remember the name Doeg. Doeg went and killed, I believe it was 85 prophets one time. Walked into the house of the Lord and killed 85 of God's prophets and priests. Right? 85 priests, I should say. There's a man who shed innocent blood with his hands. I think about some of these stories that I hear on the news and these parents that sometimes will just, you know, completely not take care of their children. And they'll just let them go. Boy, that just hurts me, man. When I see that just bothers me when I see people not do what they're supposed to. and they allow innocent blood to die. It hurts me when I think about our country and the idea of abortion, because there is no more innocent blood than the blood of an unborn child. And that's just such a shame. I think about countries that have gone into this idea of, well, let's just take the old people and we'll just put them down. Well, that's a shame. That is a shame. You're killing someone for being old. That's not a crime. That's innocent. I don't like that. Hands that shed innocent blood are around us everywhere. And we need to remember that is a symptom, that is a signal that they're part of our enemy. Number four, a heart that devises wicked plans. There are some deceitful, horrible people out there. And they do. They come up with some of the wildest things that shouldn't even enter into a human's mind. Be careful of people who come up with these wild and crazy schemes. Number five, feet that are swift in running to evil. You know, notice it doesn't say a person who gets in trouble. It's not what it says. You know, we're going to get into trouble. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things that are wrong. We're going to make some decisions that maybe put us in a bad situation. You know, we're all going to find ourselves doing things that we wish we wouldn't have done. That happens. But notice it says it's feet that are swift in running to evil. They look for trouble. They look for trouble. They run after trouble. They hunt it down. And not only do they run after it, they run fast to get to trouble. Come across people like that, be wary of them. Number six, here's the other one that kind of talks about being untruthful. He says, a false witness who speaks lies. Now think about what's the difference between number two and number six. A lying tongue and a false witness who speaks lies. What's the difference? Well, I guess I got to think about it. Number two probably didn't hurt anybody else. Okay? So if I ask a kid, where's your assignment? He says, my dog ate it. He's lying. And I know that. And he knows that. But it doesn't really hurt anybody else. But that is a lie. It's a lying tongue. But when you have a false witness who speaks lies, when someone comes to the stand on a court case and lies, commits perjury, doesn't tell the truth, that could be hurting an innocent person. Because they might be punished for something that was completely and totally false. I think that's the difference. It's the idea of you're telling a lie, it may not hurt anybody else. Number six, a false witness who speaks lies. That's in almost a criminal setting. You may cause someone who is innocent to be punished. But either way, God says he hates it. So you come across people that won't tell the truth. You come across people that are willing to lie. Maybe it's at your job or whatever, and they're willing to lie to try to keep themselves out of trouble and get somebody else in trouble. I'm going to tell you right now, stay away from them, because that's the enemy that we're fighting. And number seven, this may be the most disconcerting of all. This may be the one that hits closest to home sometimes. And one who sows discord among brethren. He puts that. A person who is kind of a fighter, a backbiter, maybe someone that tries to split the group, that splits the brethren, he puts them in the same passage as a man who sheds innocent blood. We thought about how those two equate. So if you're a backbiter, we're one that likes to stir things up, if we're always trying to start fights and disagreements and difficulties, stay away from a person who sows discord among the brethren. So that's a pretty good little checklist out there to think about when we're trying to identify who our enemy might be. And it's because of these enemies that the Christian must have the proper armor. And so it is within the context of this passage now, once we decide who is our enemy, that Paul then begins to talk about the different pieces of the armor of the Christian. And we're really familiar with that part of the passage, but maybe not so much this first part. We have an enemy. We have an enemy, and we better know who they are. Ephesians 6 and 11. He says, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. So who are we fighting? Well, we have an enemy. It's a spiritual enemy. And it's a spiritual enemy that is able to reach into the hearts of man and can make people do things that you just can't believe. But we need to be prepared to fight them. We learn from the conversation of Satan that he's a liar. He's a deceiver. He's a manipulator. He's powerful. He's intelligent. He's an aggressor. We also learn, though, that we have some ways to get away from him. We have some ways to defeat this enemy. No matter how powerful and strong he is, we have people on our side. There's more with us than there are with them. We just can't see. There's watchers around us. We may not know who they are, but there's folks that there's those that are watching us. And how powerful is that? That there'll always be more with us than there are with them. I'll close again, Ephesians 6 and 12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Don't ever forget, we have a powerful enemy, but it's an enemy that can and it will be defeated. Concludes the remarks I've had for this morning. We'd never like to close out by having a song of invitation. If we can help you in any way, we stand ready to assist.